Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Coming up on Killer Jeans.
Silver Springs 911, what's your emergency?
My fiance shot himself in the head by accident.
The initial 911 call often establishes the type of crime police are dispatched to. But what happens when the evidence contradicts investigators' cause of death?
This is a very dangerous person. If I was the interviewer now, I'd want somebody right there while I interview. That's how nuts he is.
This case of Daniel Underwood is the blurred side of death when a suicide ruling appears more like a murder. You be the judge.
And when you looked in the hallway, who was holding the shotgun? The following episode of Killer Jeans contains graphic and sensitive information and material. Listener discretion is advised.
Emmy-nominated true crime journalists bring you cases like you've never heard them before. Hear firsthand accounts from the victims' families, private investigators, lawyers, law enforcement, and even the convicted. Giving you a complete 360 of the case like no one else can.
I'm Melissa McCarty.
I'm Kelly McClear.
And this is Killer Jeans.
On this special series of Killer Jeans, we'll present the evidence, speak with experts in forensics, hear from witnesses and family. At the end of this story, we want to know what you think. Was it suicide or was it murder?
Daniel Underwood was like many 33-year-olds, overworked and searching for his next move in life by looking for a better job. But more importantly, his life revolved around being a father and stepfather, a doting son and brother to sister Stacy Johnson.
He was just a kind of carefree person. He liked spending time with his family, friends. He was always, you know, kind of like a smart aleck type joking around, but we always joked around and he was, you know, didn't really take nothing to heart, like, too bad. He always just joked around back with you, always, you know, happy. I don't think I've really seen him sad ever, really.
The siblings were 15 years apart, and Daniel was a protective older brother.
I was about 15 or 16. I was out with my friends one night, and he had texted me and was like, "Where are you at?" So I told him what I told my mom. And he's like, "Okay, that's what you told mom, but really, where are you at?" And I'm like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "I know everything. I'm your brother, you know." So, I mean, if I wasn't anywhere bad. I was just with different people, you know, whatever. But he was always checking in on me and stuff, especially as I got older. I was 18 when this happened. So we was just starting, you know, to get close and have the, you know, adult brother and sister relationship versus, you know, he was more like a dad figure when I was younger.
Daniel's mom, Donna Underwood, says growing up, Daniel thrived in anything outdoors, loved sports, and playing games with the kids.
You know, just about anything a kid would like to do with their dad, that's what he did. Then as he grew up and he had kids, he was always inviting us over to come out, and he'd have grill outside, and we'd go over there and just have a good time. We played a lot of dominoes. He loved doing it for hours at a time, you know, after he was grown. And he was good. Every thing that the kids had going on at the time, you know, whatever sporting event or whatever, he was always good about going with them. And he loved to play, like, video games with them, watch movies with them.
Daniel had three children, and one was a stepson from a previous marriage that he raised since he was 1 year old.
He had been with her for several years. And it was his dad, you know, that's what he called him, his dad. And that's the way he treated him, just like he was his own.
Daniel had a boyish look that paired well with his youthful playfulness. But his friend Maria says what she liked most about him was his banter.
Him smiling, joking, teasing at me. He was good at that, teasing you, but making you laugh about it, even though he was making fun of you. He was a great dad, goofy. I always liked to play like he was one of the little boys, too, you know, like if they brought out the child in him, too. That's all he cared about was his children.
But Daniel's jovial outlook on life, his future as a father and a man, would be snuffed out with one bullet in 2008. Daniel died from a gunshot wound to the face. It was ruled a suicide within hours of police arriving at the scene. It's a ruling his family, forensic experts, and witnesses say is impossible.
It happened in Sulphur Springs, Texas, a town 80 miles northeast of Dallas that about 20,000 residents call home. The rural and historically beautiful area is idyllic because of the overall low crime rate.
If you could just paint me a picture of Sulphur Springs.
It's just a little town. There's usually not much going on. Like, you have your regular high school kids that ride around town. There's a courthouse. Nothing really that big as far as, I think the biggest restaurant we have is like a Chili's. And then we have some downtown buildings that just have regular, local people run restaurants there. And it's just very small community.
In 2008, the year Daniel died, he was in the process of divorcing his wife and started dating a girl named Rebecca Nelson, whom he met one night out at a local club.
Daniel liked playing pool. He played pool. We had him a pool table here when he was a kid, and he'd have the boys, you know, come over and play, and he was out playing pool. That's where he met her, one of the clubs in town. And that was sometime in June. And then she actually didn't move into the house until July 4th weekend, because my daughter helped her move. And Daniel told us he was moving her in for her cooking and cleaning and helping on some of the bills. That's what he told us at that time.
And what did you know about her?
Nothing. I mean, nothing about her at all. You know, she wasn't the friendliest person at all. I had only been around her, I would say, between 2 and 3 or 3 and 4 times. And that was no more than 30 minutes at a time, because she would take off and leave to go to the bars.
Donna says Rebecca had 2 kids that her parents raised or were raising in 2008. Daniel was working at an aluminum plant, pulling 12-hour days, and he wanted more time off. So he decided to quit and cash out his 401k, which was worth about $25,000.
That weekend of before he got shot on a Thursday morning, and he had told us that he was in the red in his account, and there was no way he should have been in the red. And then I also had a man contact me by email that Daniel had told him the same thing. And he didn't know about Daniel until he had moved out of town and come back. And he said that there was a large lump of his money missing. And he says, well, why are you letting her still, you know, live here? And Daniel says, I'm trying to figure out how to get rid of her because she can be very violent.
Donna says Daniel was planning to break up with Rebecca, something Rebecca will later deny to investigators.
Hey, Killer Jeans listeners, this podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and we recommend that you give it a try.
Why? Well, because we've all been through tough times. We've all been stuck on an issue or a problem, or we're having problems at work or in our relationships. And you know what? You just need someone other than a biased friend or family member to talk to.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Melissa, I know I work out every day, but we can't forget about our mental and emotional help, too. And the cool part about BetterHelp, that's H-E-L-P, is that they assess your needs and they match you with a licensed professional. So you get someone that is going to get you.
I work out all the time, but I truly believe mental and emotional health is more important. And the best thing about this is you can book a session around your schedule, your convenience.
So join the over 2 million people that have regained control over their mental health by joining BetterHelp. And that's the thing about BetterHelp. Whatever you're going through, whatever you need help on or advice with, no matter how big or how small, the BetterHelp therapists are always there for you.
Now, BetterHelp has a special offer for the Killer Jeans listeners. You can get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/KillerJeans. That's BetterHelp.com/KillerJeans.
So join us and get started on your journey to better mental health with BetterHelp. On September 4th, Labor Day weekend of 2008, details of the night will play out in several different sequences, depending on who's telling their version of events. We start with an eyewitness, Maria Harvick, who claims she's been brushed off and disregarded by Sulphur Springs police. This is the 911 call that comes in. The two voices are Rebecca, Daniel's living girlfriend, and Maria, their friend, who moved in that very day.
Sulphur Springs 911, what's your emergency?
My fiance shot himself in the head by accident.
He shot himself in the head?
Yes.
Where are you at?
331 Carroll Lane.
331 Carroll Lane? Hold on 1 second, okay? I'll get help on it. 203, have a call. Where are you at?
I'm right here in the
Can you be in at the
331? Oh, my God.
Just take a deep breath, okay, ma'am? What is your name? You're going to have to get...
My name is Rebecca. Oh, my God.
Ma'am, where is he at? Yes, it's off of Jefferson.
Hallway.
He's in the hallway. Okay. Where are you at?
I'm in the hallway with him.
Okay.
And,
okay.
And, oh, my God.
Is he breathing?
It's like he's snoring.
There's an officer there, okay?
Becca, calm down. Just talk to him, she said. Just talk to him.
Is the door unlocked, the front door?
Yes, the front door.
Okay, somebody needs to go up.
They're here.
Okay, go talk to the officer, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Okay, Becca, come on.
Here's audio from arriving officers that night.
It's 2:07 a.m., September 4th, 2008. I'm Detective Bo Fox, Sulphur Springs Police Department. I'm out at 331 Carroll Lane.
Wounds to the right side of his head. Right eyeball's gone. Brain's exposed.
Okay. What's his age again? 31?
33 years old. 33.
He's been transported?
Yeah. When we got here, his head was on this end, of course. His legs were in there. There's 12-gauge, sawed-off 12-gauge single-shot shotgun with double-off buck round
okay.
in it.
His legs were...
Back in the
So
in
he, was,
the
he was just across the hallway?
Right.
Okay.
His head was right there with this large pool of blood there.
Okay.
Right up against that door frame.
Yeah.
We got... pellet penetration through the ceiling.
Okay.
And you got their skull fragments and stuff everywhere down here and in the room also.
Who all was here at the time?
Just the two girls.
Two girls? And who are they there? Their relation. With
she's
friends.
The fiancé and then the fiancé's friend who just moved in.
What happened? What do you
I remember it all very clearly.
Heavy winds drown out most of the interview between the detective and Rebecca, but as she's telling Detective Bo Fox what happened, she gets a phone call from a friend at the hospital where Daniel was taken.
I have to answer this. It's my friend's at the hospital. What do you need, Robert? What? Don't you dare tell me. Don't tell me.
Ha 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 ha!
so I can get up there. Okay. Love you too. Bye. Jimbo, he didn't make it. They're taking everybody to the chapel.
Sorry, Rebecca.
We sat on the couch. Maria went to her room to change because we were going to watch a comedian show. Uh-huh. She's on the phone with my best friend, Jimbo.
Yeah.
And we're sitting on the couch and we decided we check our account, our bank account online every night. Right. And he got a line and he pointed the laptop at me and he said, what am I supposed to do?
Right.
And I said, what do you mean, what are you supposed to do?
I'm sorry, Rebecca.
And I said, what do you mean? What are you supposed to do? And he said, look. And I said, we're $42 in the positive and we pay our bills.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
He just recently lost his job.
Where was he working at?
He was working at Hydro.
Hydro?
Yeah, aluminum in Commerce. He'd been there for 6 years. And got fed up one night and he quit. Because that's what broke up his last marriage. He didn't want that to break us up because he had to work nights. And, I said, what do you want me to do? Do you want, I can go get a job. I work with my mom already. I can go get a job. Is that too? I said, what do you, you know, if that's what you want me to do, that's fine, I don't care. I've worked all my life, it's no deal. And he said, no, I'm going to show you what I'm going to do. And he got up and stormed down the hallway to the bedroom.
Who all was at the house this time? You, him?
It's me, him, and Maria.
Maria lives with y'all here.
She moved in about a couple of days ago. She was in her room with the door shut. She didn't know what was going on at this point.
Was she asleep or what?
No, she was in there changing. Okay. She was out with us. What? I know. I love her too. I love her too. Let me call y'all back here in a few minutes. I'm giving my statement. Yeah, I gotta finish my statement. He storms down the hallway and says, I'll show you what I'm going to do about it.
Yeah.
And he goes back into the bedroom and he comes out in the hallway and I looked around the corner and sit on the couch. And he's got a shotgun, which I know is loaded.
You're sitting on the couch.
I'm sitting on the couch. Uh-huh. And he comes out with it caught backwards to his chin. So I jump up and run down the hallway, uh-huh. And he corners me. If you look down that main hallway, there's a door, and then there's a door to door. Door to our bedroom, the door to the boys' room, and then there's the closet door. He had me pinned up against that door with the gun to his chin. And he asked me, what am I supposed to do? And I said, baby, I don't know. I just want you to put the gun down.
I want to back up just a second, because I want to be sure I get this right, okay?
Okay.
He walks down the hall. You're sitting on the couch. And then you get, what do you see to make you get up? And go
I saw him in the hallway with a gun to his chin.
Okay, so you get up.
I get up and come down the hallway. And I walk past him, and I grab the gun. Up what, here by what? The top part of the gun. I don't know where the bullet comes
you're
out.
You're referring to a long gun.
Yeah, the gun that's in there laying down, the only gun in the house. What is it, a shotgun or right. whatever it is?
Right.
The long part where the, oh, is that far? I had my finger over the top part where the bullet comes out.
Okay.
And I said, don't pull that trigger, my finger's over
and
it.
And you, in between him and the
the closet door, that end door?
I'm against the closet, yeah, that end door, okay. The linen closet. I'm against that door, holding the top of the gun, and up here like this, and he's got it to his chin. And I start crying because I saw the look in his eye. I start crying. I said, baby, please don't do this.
Yeah.
I love you. Please don't do this. He starts talking. I yelled for Maria to come out of the bedroom and to come here and help me. And she comes out and sees what's going on. And I asked her if she was still talking to Jimbo on the phone. And she said, yes. And I said, tell Jimbo to get over here.
Maria Harvick was going through a divorce at the time and moved in with Daniel and Rebecca. This was her first night at the house with the couple.
Yeah, I was going through a divorce. And when I was at work the day before we had actually, that night, she kept trying to message me that night before, trying to get me to move in. And I wasn't actually supposed to move in yet. But she kept trying to get me to go ahead and stay that weekend, starting that day before we went out that night.
What did you think of Rebecca and Daniel as a, you know, as a couple, as friends, individually?
Individually, I'd already heard about her rumors in town. Everybody knew her from moving from guy to guy. So I didn't think much of her. But when they started dating, you know, he was a good guy. So I thought, well, you know, I'll give her a chance.
You brought up a good point. It's a small town. Tell me about the town and the social circuit and dating in that environment.
Well, I mean, most people, there wasn't much to do in town. So most people went and sang karaoke or played pool at the bar. So I saw her a lot that way because I like to go sing karaoke and she liked to go play pool. So I would see her there because she would also sing karaoke in between her games of pool.
Earlier in the evening, Maria says a small group of friends went to play pool and sing karaoke. She describes the moods of the night.
Rebecca started messaging me, trying to get me to come over there as well because her and Daniel were there at that same bar my friend was at. So I told them all that I'd just be over there in a little bit.
When you were there, was it just a fun night, you know, drinks with friends? Was there any indication of what was to come later?
No, there was no indication. I figured we'd just go to that one bar, you know, hang out for a little bit and go home. Didn't plan on going to East Fork or none of that where we ended up at.
But throughout the night, were they in good moods? Were they ever arguing or laughing? Were they a happy couple?
Well, they were playing pool with another couple or some guys at the bar. And me and my friend were sitting at the bar just drinking and talking while they played pool. So didn't really see what they were doing. Just every once in a while, you know, we'd glance over there, see what they were doing. And they were just playing some other guys there. Until some late rowdy lady showed up, and then she started a fight with me. I didn't even know who she was. So then Rebecca got into it with her, and then that they got in a big fight there.
Where did you go after that?
That's why we left, because then that lady started the big fight. Her and Rebecca got into it. The lady had stretched out Rebecca's shirt. Daniel had to jump in and stop it. So Rebecca was wanting to leave, but she wanted to stop by their house. And change first. And so they asked me and Robin if we wanted to go with them to like East Fork. And we discussed it a little bit. We all finally decided, okay, that we'd go and we'd all ride together. So we ended up going back to Daniel's house so that Rebecca could change. And then we headed to the other bar.
So at this other bar, what happened there?
We were all sitting around the table and then another guy showed up that used to sing karaoke at the first bar I was at too. And apparently him and Rebecca had already agreed that he was supposed to meet her there so that they could talk about doing some kind of song together because that guy played a guitar. So then that kind of turned into a thing.
Was Daniel jealous of that? Or was it just a completely innocent, let's just sing a song together?
No, I wouldn't say he was jealous of it. He just didn't know that he was supposed to show up there and then that they were going to do that. So they discussed it a little bit or whatever. He said, well, I'm going to be over here playing pool. So he stayed playing pool with some people that he met there. And then Rebecca sat at the table around with me and Robin and them, and they discussed, you know, the song they wanted to sing and all that. And then they went to step outside, him and her. But before that guy showed up, Rebecca and Daniel were playing pool together with another couple.
When they stepped outside, and, was that just like a smoke break? Or, I mean, was it innocent in nature, you think?
Honestly, I don't know. I don't know if it was innocent or not, because then that's when her attitude changed, where she was just kind of acting jealous about Daniel playing pool with the other couple.
Oh, so Rebecca was the one that started getting a little jealous of Daniel.
Yes, because she thought that he was flirting with the other guy's girlfriend, the ones they were playing with.
And how long?
So I guess maybe, I'm thinking maybe she just stepped out with the other guy just to see what he would do, I guess, to see his reaction.
Mm. How long do you think you guys were at the bar that night?
I would say hour, maybe two.
How was it decided then that you would go back to the house, back to Daniel's house with them?
We all just decided to leave. It was getting late, and Rebecca was ready to leave, and then Daniel was ready to leave. Me and Robin had been ready to leave, so we all just kind of discussed it and decided that, well, we should just go back. But she was also wanting to meet somebody before we went back to their house.
Who was wanting to? Rebecca?
Yes.
Who so did we had she want to meet?
We made two stops at two banks, I remember that night, before we met. And we went back to the same bar where they had started at. She wanted to meet some guy to buy some pills from him. And that was the reason why we made two stops at the bank, because I guess the first bank, for some reason, they couldn't get cash there. So we ended up going to a different bank. And then they got cash there. And then that's when we stopped at that. Back at that same bar, and then only she got out and met with the guy and then got some pills. We asked her, you know, what we had to stop it for, and she finally told us, because me and Robin were just ready to get back to the house. So Robin was wanting to get to her car and go home. She didn't want to stay the night.
So Rebecca and Daniel both drinking. Rebecca, did you see her take those pills that night?
No, I never saw her take them.
Okay.
I just knew she bought them.
Okay, for all of you ladies listening right now, do you suffer from thinning hair? I'm going to be totally honest. As I've gotten older, I've noticed a huge difference in the health of my hair. Especially with all of the hormonal changes over the past couple of years, I am seeing significant thinning. Ugh.
Girl, you are not alone. I have some friends that stress over this very thing every single day. And honestly, over 30 million women are going through the same thing. Thinning hair is caused by stress. You know, the wacky diets that we do, overstyling. And I know I'm guilty of a lot of that, you know, especially living on a stress diet and even environmental toxins. But the good news is there's a solution with Nutrafol. Nutrafol is physician formulated and 100% drug free, which is so important. And once you start taking it, you'll see thicker and stronger hair in just 3 to 6 months.
So what I did is I went to Nutrafol.com and took a hair wellness quiz, and I got personalized product recommendations that was unique to my needs. And the other great thing about Nutrafol that I'm really excited about is it can help with stress. It helps with better sleep, better skin, better nails. It's the total package.
Which is a sign of youth, good skin. You can grow thicker, healthier hair and support our show by going to Nutrafol.com and entering the promo code KLGE to save $15 off your first month subscription. This is the best offer anywhere, and it is only available to U.S. customers for a limited time, plus free shipping on every single order. Now get $15 off at Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code KLGE.
Look, I've got enough things to worry about as I get older, and I really don't want my hair thinning to be one of them. So I encourage everybody to join Melissa and me as we take Nutrafol to take back control of our hair. Now, back at Daniel's house, it was just Rebecca, Daniel, and Maria. The three grabbed a beer. While Rebecca was searching through movies to watch, Daniel seemed distracted. Maria says he was looking down at his laptop. This angered Rebecca, so she threw a DVD at him to get his attention.
They were kind of starting to get in an argument, so I told him I was going to go to the room and call my boyfriend at the time. So that's what I did. So I left them alone so that they could work that out, because I didn't want to be there if they were going to argue. So I went to the room I was supposed to stay in that night, looked through my bag. I still had all my stuff in bags. I was looking through there to find me something to sleep in. And then I called my boyfriend and was talking to him on the phone when I finally heard my name. So it wasn't long after we were home when everything started. Because after I had gotten to my night clothes and then I called my boyfriend, I was on the phone with him when I heard somebody yelling my name. And then when I stepped out, I looked in the living room to the left and there was nobody there. So I looked to the right and they were standing at the end of the hallway and they was already there with the shotgun and everything going on.
Who is the one that called your name?
Rebecca.
And was it just your name or was it please help?
No, it was just my name.
Maria tells her boyfriend Jimbo to hurry over, then hangs up.
And when you looked in the hallway, who was holding the shotgun?
They both were. But he had it and he was holding it to his chin and was saying that he would do it. And so I walked out there. I sat my phone down and I walked out there because he told me he would be right there. So I hung up and I went out the hallway and I stood next to them and I was trying to tell Daniel to please give it to me. And Rebecca was holding it up at the top, and I told her to let it go because his finger was on the trigger, and I didn't want her to make it accidentally go off. So I told her to just let it go and not to touch it because I didn't want to touch it because I didn't want to make it go off. So I kept telling her the same thing, but she wouldn't let go. And I just kept telling Daniel to please put it down, please give it to me or something. And I remember he turned and looked me straight in my eyes and said, because I said, give me the gun. And he said, it's not a gun, it's a shotgun.
And at that point, his finger was on the trigger. Both of her hands were at the top of the barrel. Then what happened?
No, she had one hand at the top of the barrel. And the other hand, she had kind of lower, like she was trying to pull it. They just kind of argued back and forth. She kept saying, please, we can work this out. Just please stop. And then he never said anything right then. So she was just kind of started crying. She was like, Maria, can you go call Jimbo? Tell him to get here. Please go call him. Tell him to. And I said, I'll go in a minute because I didn't want to leave. And I said, I already told him, but she kept persisting. So I kept trying to talk to Daniel to give me the gun. And then she was grabbing it from the top, one hand from the top and one hand from towards the bottom. But he finally took his finger off the trigger. And so when I seen that he did that, that's when I said, okay, I'll go. Well, she was saying, because Rebecca was still yelling for me to go call Jimbo. So I went back to the room and called him and told him that he needed to hurry up. Because it just seemed to me like it was a forever kind of thing. And I know it had just been a few minutes since I told him, please get over here. But at the moment, it seemed like it was forever and I needed to call him again too. Because I just was lost. I didn't know what to do.
When his finger was taken off the trigger and you felt more comfortable, did it drop to his side? What did he do with that trigger hand?
Yeah, he just dropped it down to his side.
So was he still holding the gun then?
No, she was.
She was holding the entire gun with both hands and he didn't have any hand on it?
Yeah, no, he had his left hand on it, but not where the trigger was.
Okay.
He was just not letting her have control of it.
Right.
And they're still in the hallway, correct? Outside of the master bedroom.
This is critical. Maria is saying after Daniel and Rebecca push the shotgun back and forth, fighting for control over it, Daniel finally releases his finger from the trigger. Maria saw that hand drop down to his side. However, he kept one hand on the barrel to maintain a grip on it. She says Rebecca then had the control and both hands on the shotgun.
Yeah, so she was, they was pretty much, to me, it was like they were pushing it back and forth.
Yeah.
She was trying to take it, he was trying to keep it.
Tell me,
he didn't want her to have it either.
Right. Do you remember any words that were being said at that moments before, and did you make it back in time in the hallway before it went off?
He was just telling her that he wanted to know where his money went. He had looked at his laptop, and he said he only had $42 and some change left in his bank account. He wanted to know where all the money had went. She said that she didn't know. And he told her she was a liar. You know, pretty much he just wanted to know where his money had went.
When did the gun go off, and what did you see and hear when that happened?
As soon as I went to step in the bedroom, I went to step in and I heard it go off immediately. I turned around. I was still at the doorway, so I was still right there. The door was very close to where they were standing. I would say maybe five feet maybe from where they were at. And so I could still see them. And so when it went off, it was just like slow motion. I saw objects fly up. And then I saw him fall over. And when he fell on his side. And then she just sideswiped the rifle into the bedroom there that was to the left of her, which was the boys' bedroom. And then she proceeded to flip him over. And then she just started kind of going hysterical, like, oh, my God, he shot himself. He just killed himself. And so I was thinking I had hung up my phone with Jimbo, but I never did. I thought that I did, because then I found out later when Jimbo showed up that he said he was on the line, that he heard the shot go off. It's like all the sounds and the smells come back when I recall it. So, yeah, it is hard to talk about it, but I do it because I told Donna that I would do everything that she wanted me to do.
When you walked away for a split second, but you're still in the line of sight, and you turned your head and you turned back, do you think, just, you know, thinking of all options here, there was a chance that he grabbed the trigger in the meantime, or from how it went down, was there not enough time for him to grab it from her and grab the trigger? Are you certain?
No, there was. Yes, I'm certain. I saw his hand pushing it, the top of the barrel, away with his left hand, and I saw the butt of the gun hit her in the leg. I mean, it just played in slow motion.
After she,
as soon as it hit her leg, and he fell, she went down, and with her left hand, she swapped it off into the bedroom.
I understand, though, that 911 was not called right away. What happened between you and Rebecca after Daniel was shot?
Well, I went and knelt beside him, and I was telling her she needed to call 911, but she was going up and down the hallway saying, no, wait, hold on, just wait, give me a minute, hold on. And I told her, wait for what? I said, we need to call 911. And so I got up and was fixing to go down the hall to get the phone and call. And then that's when she said, no, I'll do it. She ran into the living room and grabbed his phone. And finally, but before she called, she told me not to tell them that they'd been arguing and everything from the bar and stuff. And not to tell them about her getting jealous about that lady playing pool.
Well, also, she told police that you were in your room the whole time. So I know that at the time you were interrogated, you said you didn't see it. So take me through what made you kind of go along with her story at that moment.
Well, I was going through a divorce. I had really no other place to go. I have my kids were about four of them, and they were little bitty at the time. So I didn't know what she would do. I figured she would probably, you know, shoot me too or something. So, I just wanted her to hurry up and call 911. So I just went along with what she had told me to do.
And then after the 24 hours later, did you ever see her or talk to her again?
Yes, I saw her the next day.
Did she say anything that alerted you? Did you discuss it at all?
No, no. She just, the only thing that I knew was that one of the persons that she had took back to the house that same night after she gave our statement had told me that she had, that Rebecca had took her and some other people back to the house after we left the police station.
Maria, real quick, did Jimbo, when did he finally show up at the house?
After the ambulance and stuff had come, he came by. He came by there.
Okay, so the ambulance was already there when he got there.
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we were, because when they told us to step out, she didn't want to step out at first. And because I told her, once 911 called, I told her we needed to open the doors, because that's what they had said on the phone, to open the door. But she told me that she didn't want to open the doors because she didn't want to let her cats out, whatever. But they said that they needed to have the door open so when they got there that they could come in. Because she told me what they said. And then I could hear her yelling hysterically back and forth talking to them. So when they got there, they had their arms and with their guns out. And they were, you know, coming in slowly, checking the scene because they don't know what's waiting there. Right. And they told us to put our hands up and to please follow them and step outside. So I did as they said. And then she was still just sitting there, didn't want to get up. She was just crying and grabbing at Daniel, saying, oh, my God, oh, my God. So I just kept telling her to just come on, let's go outside so they can help him. So that's when she finally got up and I got her to go outside. She still had his phone in her hand. As soon as we stepped out the front door, she started calling the bartender and a bunch of other people from the bar telling them, Daniel just killed himself, and I'm the beneficiary.
And you heard her say that?
Yes, I was sitting right next to her.
Now, you're hearing that, her say, I'm the beneficiary, he killed himself. You heard her say to police, he just killed himself, and you saw differently. What were you thinking?
I didn't know what to think, actually, at the time. I was just kind of freaking out. I felt like... I guess I felt like I was there alone. Like, I didn't know what to think. I just needed somebody to get there. So I couldn't wait for Jimbo to get there. I just needed somebody there.
On the next episode, hear from Rebecca during her interrogation and the bizarre exchange between her and the lead detective.
The other thing I've been told is that you have said that you and I were having some sort of relationship.
What?
And a forensic expert breaks down why this should have been a homicide investigation.
Follow Killer Jeans on Facebook and on Instagram. It's at Killer Jeans, the podcast.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.